Alrighty, so I can't see a thing. So hopefully there's people out there. So good morning, and welcome to Systems Center Universe number 4. This is my 4th year being here. It's fantastic. I always enjoy this event. It's my first year here being a non-Microsoft person, though. As I'm sure everybody is aware of, I left Microsoft in end of April or beginning of May last year, and now work for Cyrosyn. So one of my goals at Cyrosyn is to try and get them more and more into the configuration manager space, being a service manager primary customers, product company. So this topic, my favorite configuration manager features. I've been asked a lot of times to do presentations on what my favorite features were, and it just never worked out. So I decided this would be a great time to do that. So let's go ahead and talk about those features. So the agenda is pretty simple. I just want to talk about what features I like in the product. Some of these you guys will agree with, some of these you guys won't like, some of these you may not be using. And my goal here is to get you to the point where if you're not using some of these features, you at least think about using them, and maybe you will think about implementing some of those features. Maybe some of those you are using, but maybe you're not fully utilizing, so things you could do a little bit better with that environment. So. I'm going to demo as much as possible. However, this is like an hour and a half to 2 hour presentation. I'm going to try and cram into the hour we have. So won't be able to get real deep into any of the features, unfortunately, but we'll do our best. So, all right, so I said in the previous slide here that they're not necessarily in priority order. However, I did put client health first because that actually is my very favorite feature in Configuration Manager 2012, is the client health feature. It's fantastic from the fact that it gives you a couple of great benefits in your environment. The first off is the ability to find out which clients are really active in your environment. So which of your clients are actively communicating with your Configuration Manager infrastructure? And where that is really beneficial for you is gives you the ability of now really giving management a clear answer when they ask you, how long is it going to take you to patch for February? How long is it going to take you to roll out the new version of ABC software? And before, you wouldn't really have a great idea. You might have some guesses, it's going to take me X number of weeks or days or whatever it happens to be to hit 80-some percentage of your population. But with the client health feature and the ability of identifying which clients are really active on your environment and communicating with your site infrastructure, you now can tell them, I've got 95% active clients, so we should be able to hit 95% penetration on this, whatever deployment it is, within X number of days, depending upon maintenance windows and what your rollout plans are and so on. So that's a great benefit to you. The next benefit of the client health feature is the health portion of it. So the first one is client activity that we just talked about. The next one is getting my clients so that they can communicate with my environment. And that's one of the most common problems that you guys have had to deal with in the older days was to get clients healthy so that they were communicating with your environment so that you could go ahead and patch them. You could deploy that new piece of software. You could do whatever it is you wanted to. And so you would either do manual processes, running around your network and trying to find out who is active and not, and running some scripts locally. Maybe you had some community scripts you would send out to do some troubleshooting for you. But it was a process you had to go through. And one of the things I used to do with Microsoft was I worked with the TAP program. So working with TAP customers that would adopt our early versions of software, so beta versions of Configuration Manager, and test them out for us in their production environments. And when we were coming out with this feature in ConfigMan 2012, I asked a bunch of my TAP customers what their standard client health rate was. And the pretty common answer was in the 80 to 85% range, that they felt that they could hit 80 to 85% of their clients with any kind of a deployment over X number of days. So as soon as we implemented beta 1 of ConfigMan 2012, which I think was still called VNext back then, that skyrocketed to the mid-90s. And that 80 to 85% was with them spending hours a week slash month to go out there and find these broken clients and fixing them. Well, now ConfigMan does that for you automatically. So you shouldn't have to take those hours a week or month to devote to troubleshooting client health so that you can hit 85% of your clients. You can now take those hours to really managing your environment, getting your clients up to where they need to be with software, with patches, whatever it is, because Configuration Manager takes care of that remediation of your clients. So it does a great job of finding broken clients and fixing those breakages in your clients. And the most common thing that gets broken is WMI, as you all know. And that's obviously an operating system thing that takes a while to get there, but every release Microsoft has, WMI gets more resilient, gets more stable, so things get better. But there's a number of checks in here that the product will go through to check for WMI and help remediate those. So it's very, very cool feature. So let's go ahead and take a quick look at that for you. Let's switch over to our, got a whole bunch of Hyper-Vs here running. Not PowerPoint. There you go. This primary site is what we want. All right, so this is our standard site. If I go and look at my monitoring workspace, and I go to client status, here's our standard node that you're familiar with. A couple of things of importance. You want to make sure that you know what the last date and time this gets summarized. And that'll be very important for you for something I'll talk about here in just a second. It will then tell you what your overall status is. And I've obviously got a fairly small environment. It says I've got 5 clients and 4 devices that are active, where you guys can have hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of devices. But obviously not all my clients are active. So I've got some inactive clients here. Thankfully, I've got none that have failed health checks. So every one of my clients has passed health remediation. So that's all good. I have one client that either that's not unhealthy, but it's not active right now. So you can click the hyperlink here, and it'll show me what that client is. It's a computer called Member. If I go down to the client activity tab, I can then drill in and see the last date and time this guy communicated with my site infrastructure at all. And it's been a number of months. Now, this is just a VM that's not been up and running, so that makes sense. But this gives you the timing so you can go out there and really troubleshoot to see when this guy has been on the network. It's been a number of months, number of days, whatever it is. Vacations, you have to factor those in, whatever it is. So it gives you that information. And it obviously tells you at the bottom, it's been 50 days since last communication. Well, that's not good. Now, this was just a VM that wasn't up and running. So I actually have powered it on now. So if I go back here and notice the last time this was summarized was 7:59, almost 7:50 this morning, Seattle time. So now if I just do a refresh client status, let this guy update to whatever the current date and time will be. And when he gets updated, it will go ahead and now give you updated information when it does update. Sometimes you gotta go click a different node. And notice this is a, there it goes, 906. So it has updated now, and now it says I have 5 active clients. So just a client that wasn't on the network at the time when my site last updated. So this feature does its updating, and you can see with the schedule, by default, on a daily basis. So if your site server's constantly running, it'll update pretty much every 24 hours that same time frame. But you can always go force it like this to get your clients up and active in your environment. So now if I go back to that clients that are inactive, the results are empty now because that computer has been summarized and it is now in my list of active systems. And this happens to be a bug in the console where once you do that summarization and switching around, it changes your node. It should say client status there. And of course, you can drill into more detail for client activity. You can also go into client check and see if you have any problems. And these are all hyperlinks here, the colors in the chart, as well as in your legend. And you can change your timing to see how long a history you want to go back and look. These VMs have been running, so I'm not going to have a nice cool bar chart for you, but you can see your trends of analysis over activity or health over the periods of time. So I don't have much any more time to go into more details, but I could also do a remediation and have it fix some things that are there. But very, very cool feature, something that's very well utilized and, again, is actually my favorite feature in the product. So the next one is role-based administration. So you guys probably all came from a ConfigMan 2007 environment. Hopefully none of you are still there, but there could be some. ConfigMan 2007 administration as far as controlling who could what do what in the console was not very easy to utilize. It was pretty hokey, had to do a lot of things to it. So a lot of people would actually stand at multiple primary sites to keep the desktop guys away from the server guys. Because the server guys were definitely afraid that the desktop guys were going to deploy some patches to his servers and reboot them in the inopportune times. Well, it's a 2012 product. The role-based administration is a great feature to help you control who can do what, to whom, on which objects in the Configuration Manager console. So it really gives you a lot of granular control over who can use the console and what they can do with that console. And you don't have to do a lot of configuration for it. Now, the downside of this feature is that unless you implement it, everybody you add is a king and can do everything. So you really do need to implement this feature effectively before you can really lock down what you're utilizing. So you're going to create custom collections, custom security scopes, and then assign those collections to users, assign those scopes to your administrative users, and then tag those objects you want them to utilize or to be able to administer with those same security scopes. So very, very easy to use. It just takes a while to get there to get it to what you want it to do. One of the cool things is that as of the R2 release of ConfigMan 2012, this role-based administration also flows down to your reports. So from 2012 and 2012 SP1, you had role-based administration in the console, so your admins in the console could only see what they needed to see. But when I went and ran a report, let's say a patch report, if that patch report was scoped to all systems, my desktop guy would see all his desktops as well as all the servers, which is not what you wanted. So now with the R2 release, that now has been filtered down to the report technology. So you should see in your reports the exact same thing that you see in your console. And this is actually one of the reasons that even with 2012 and the role-based administration, some people would still use separate primary sites for servers and desktops because they didn't want to create custom reports to scope them down to the collections of workstations or collections of servers. They would have different primary sites. And now you can very easily implement that in a single primary site. So just to show you this real quickly, if I go to my administration workspace, go to security, go to administrative users, you'll see I have three users, my built-in administrator, plus I added Travis and Wally. I'm going to go ahead and add in the collections attribute as well as the security scopes attribute. So now I can see that Travis, who's the second user here, is scoped to workstations, so he manages just my workstations, and he can only access objects that are tagged with the desktop security scope. And Wally, being me, I can do the same thing as Travis, but only to servers and with objects tagged to the server security scope. So now if I just go ahead and launch the console in the context of Travis, run as a different user. Oops, got to spell Travis correctly. So the console will start up in his context, and you'll see immediately some differences. So here's the assets and compliance workspace. Notice there's no software metering, there's no asset intelligence, there's no compliance settings, things that a application administrator, software updates manager doesn't need to see, which are the two roles I gave Travis. If we go click on devices, he can only see two devices, which happen to be workstation class devices. If I go look at device collections, he's only seeing the one collection I gave him, which is the workstations. So if I implement this properly, there's absolutely no way that Travis could ever do anything to any of my servers, because he can only see those two computers in my scenario. Thousands more workstations you're gonna have, but that's all you have access to. If he goes and creates a collection, the only collection you have access to is all workstations, so it's limited to the all workstations collection. So he can create a collection of Travis workstations, but it's only gonna be whatever he can see inside the all workstations collection. If I gave him software capability, so if I go to application management, there's an application here he can see. It's XML Notepad 2007. And if I just go throw on the security scopes tag, you can see it's tagged with the desktop security scope. So yes, he's allowed to see it. If I go look at packages, the same thing. There's a couple of packages in here. And this happens to be a R2 CU2 update for x86 and x64 clients, something that a workstation administrator would need to have access to. He's also a software update manager, so he has access to software updates. If I go look at software update groups, there's one here for Windows 8.1 updates. And if I were to go and add in the, again, the column for security scopes, you would see that it is tagged with the desktop security scope. Now if I go and launch that as Wally real quickly, we'll see some differences. It'll actually look fairly similar, just different objects have access to, and I gotta type it correctly. Maybe I went to Martin's school of typing with two A's in his name, like they said in the video. So you just got the servers and collection, and now if I go look at software library, my objects, applications, I don't see XML Notepad. That's not one that's been scoped for servers. Remember, I looked at it and it said desktops. If I go to packages, it does allow me to see those same two updates for clients because I do have to update my servers as clients to R2, CU2 in this case, but also the console update. If I go to software update groups, then I have a different one. This is Windows Server updates as opposed to the Windows 8.1 updates. So great capabilities of administering and controlling who can do what. Last thing I'll show you is both those guys want to be able to deploy software, so they have to have access to distribution points, which neither of them have by default. So if I just switch consoles real quick and go back to the full administrator, go to my distribution point, here's how easy or hard, however you want to look at it, it is to update. Right click, says security scopes on my DP. I'll say it's available to both desktop and server guys. I may very well have a different set of DPs for my desktop guys versus my server guys, but I only have one here. It's done. Go back to my server as Wally, console, and refresh. No logging out, no logging on. Very, very simply, I just go in there and update, and it adapts automatically. You just have to refresh the console. So very, very cool. I'm actually doing another presentation, not here, but at the user group tomorrow, called the Configuration Manager Least Utilized Features or Underutilized Features. And I actually have role-based administration in that presentation as well. It's one of my favorite features, but not everybody's utilizing it as effectively as they should. So hopefully this will give you a couple things, and there's actually some even more deep granular controls you can implement in addition to just what I showed you here. So, migration. Is there anybody left out there on 2007? Don't be shy, raise your hand if you are. Okay, there's a few hands out there. So this is a very cool feature. It allows you to very, very easily migrate your stuff, and stuff being all those things you care about, your collections, your packages, your advertisements, your DCM configuration items, baselines, and so on. Migrate all that stuff from ConfigMan 2007 over to ConfigMan 2012. When you moved from SMS 2003 to ConfigMan 2007, you could have done an in-place upgrade and all that stuff would have maintained in your environment. A lot of people didn't because they used that as a great time to do a wipe and load, a clean sweep, start over, get rid of all that garbage that's been in your site for years that's not been touched, not been decommissioned, not been deleted. So a lot of people would do a wipe and load. Now you can do that cherry picking, as we call it, inside the migration technology. So it's a great way to migrate from 2007 to 2012. It's also a fantastic way, a feature that you can utilize even if you're already on 2012. Because you all have test lab environments. So before you do anything in your production environment, I know you all go to your test lab, you create that user, you create that object, you create that collection, you create that deployment, whatever it is, you fully test it out in your test labs, and then you go to your production environment and you recreate that same stuff over in production after you validate it and test. But whenever you do that, you always tend to forget something. You forgot to flip some switch. You forgot to change some setting in that environment between the tests to the production. Well, now with a migration feature, you can migrate between two different ConfigMan 2012 sites that are running the same version. So the ConfigMan 2012 R2 to ConfigMan 2012 R2. So do your testing in your test lab, migrate those created and tested and validated objects from test lab over to production. You don't have to worry about missing anything because you already verified that it worked. So it's a very, very cool feature. I think we already talked about that. So let's just do that for a second. So I do have a ConfigMan 2007 environment here running. I'm just going to go to the migration node, specify source hierarchy. In my case, it is a 2007 environment, but this could very easily be another ConfigMan 2012 environment of the same version, SP1 to SP1, R2 to R2. I have to connect across the network to that computer, that environment, to query some information. So we're going to go ahead and use our built-in administrator account. And I want to verify, type in proper credentials. First thing we're going to query is WMI. So we'll go verify, go to WMI. Let's go to the site underscore TST namespace. And that account works for WMI. I could use the same account for SQL, or I could use a different account. Let's see if the same account worked for SQL. And we're going to go to the SMS underscore TST database and test. And that works, so we'll use the same account for both. And I'll just use that option there to say, hey, yeah, use that same account up here, Cyrus and Demo Administrator. Use that account for SQL Server as well. Just click OK, and it kicks off what's called the data gathering process. It finds out what information is available on my source site, which, again, could be 2007, could be 2012, that can be potentially migrated over to my current site, which is going to be a 2012 environment. It should kick off here and finish in just a moment. There was the option in there to enable distribution point sharing, which allows both environments to use the same DPs, which I did not enable. But you can certainly do that as well. If I go click on close, now if I look at my migration dashboard, it shows me that I have some objects that are available to be migrated. I just have a puny 35. You guys have thousands of objects, tens of thousands of objects you want to migrate. It shows you how many objects you have migrated already or excluded or how many are left over. Same thing for clients. And this environment only has one client there, but it will show you that you've got 10,000 clients that are in your old environment that need to be migrated over to the current environment. Now that I've done that, I'm going to go ahead and migrate some objects real quick. So I'll just go to Migration Jobs, Create Migration Job. I'll say Collection. And I pick and choose which collection. These are all the collections we found with the migration data gathering process. I'll take that collection. Here's a couple of objects that are targeted to members of those collections that I've selected. I'll go ahead and take all those. But if I say, hey, yeah, this is an old package. I don't need it anymore. ConfigMan 2007 toolkit, don't need that. I can clear that. So here's how I would do that cleaning process. I don't migrate over the garbage that I have that I've never cleaned up. I can just pick and choose what I really need to have brought across. So my deployments, and I certainly don't need the package, so I'll just migrate the one object over. And I'll just walk through the wizard. I have to give it security, so I'll say those are desktop items, so I'll give them to Travis, so it's the desktop scope, and I'll say default as well. And I'll say run the job right now. It kicks off, it's going to go ahead and run that job. If I don't want to migrate by collections, I can also go in here and do migrate by objects. And just pick the different job type down at the bottom called object migration. Now it just shows me a flat listing of all the different type of objects that it did discover in the source environment, and I can pick and choose whatever I want. For example, if I want to take boundaries, if I want to take, I can take my software distribution packages. Here it shows that one was occluded and one was migrated. So it shows me that, hey, you told me you didn't want to take this one before, so I don't think you want to take it now. And here's one that was already migrated. So I can go ahead and take those if I wish to. And it keeps track of the information. Software metering rules, I've only got 8 different software metering rules, so I can pick any of those I wanted to. And I'll say again, those are desktop items in default. Run the job right now. And bingo, I've got 2 migration jobs that have run, or created. The first one's done by now. Second one, it's probably started. If I go look at objects and job, here you can see that it's in the process, migrated, skipped. Now that I create all that information, let's go look and see, software library. And, I killed the toolkit. It was a 2007 toolkit, but I didn't bring across a package. Oops, packages. And there's the XML Notepad 2007 package. So I brought that across, and you can tell by the package ID. It's got the source code of the original site. So TST was my site code for the original site. And last thing I'll show you here is collections. It created collections. Minimize that. Go to device collections and hit refresh. Because it created a folder called campus, because I had an empty collection called campus, which had 2 sub-collections in it. No longer any sub-collections, so it created 2 collections called building 1, building 2, in the folder, which is that empty collection called campus. So very, very cool, but not just for old stuff to new stuff, current to current. being from lab to dev to production, whatever you need. Custom client settings. So this was a reason that a lot of people would also implement multiple primary sites was the inability, easily anyway, of having different settings between servers and desktops. Yeah, you could do it with local policies and some stuff with the SDK, but most people didn't, so most people would go and create separate primary sites so they could have those separate settings. Now you can very, very easily have configurable settings that are unique to individual collections of clients. So I can configure settings that are appropriate for my mass population, which would be workstations, and then create one-off settings for those server populations that are different, or different settings for my clients in a specific area, high volume area, where it needs to be more interactive. So you can do that very, very simply and easily. So you configure your default settings the way you want for the vast majority of your population, which would be your workstations, likely. And then you would go ahead and create custom settings for those individual pockets of systems that need to be uniquely configured. And very, very easy. Now you have the resultant client settings in the console, so you can see what the end result is going to be on your client computers. So if I go back to my administration workspace, and I go to client settings, I go to default client settings. These are what is set for everybody. Everybody gets the default client settings. And we'll see that computer agent, when I click on computer agent, I have nothing listed here for software center name, organization name. And if we look at remote tools, we'll see that remote control is disabled. Well, let's go ahead and change that. So I'll leave the default. Let's go create a custom setting. We'll call this System Center Universe, oops, 2015. I just about gave you a new acronym. Computer agent and remote tools for computer agent. I'll type the same thing, SCU 2015, in for the organization name. And for remote tools, I want to go ahead and enable remote tools. And I want to configure the domain firewall policy appropriately for 2701. So I created that setting. It doesn't do any good until it's been deployed. You see deployment says zero. So I'm going to go ahead and deploy those settings to my all workstations collection. So I'll do that, and now it's been deployed. Well, the policy's been created and made available. Next time those clients check in to retrieve machine policies, they'll get those implemented settings. But what's going to happen? So I can go to Assets and Compliance. Let me go to Devices node. Let me look at one of my clients. So I'll look at my Windows 8.1 client. I'll go to Client Settings, Resultant Client Settings. This is an accumulation of all the client settings targeted to this computer, and what the end result's going to be based on priorities. So you can see computer agent does have SCU 2015 listed. So it's going to get that. Remote tools is enabled for domain policy. Oops. Whereas if I close that, and if I go to, let's say, my domain controller, and look at client settings, resultant client settings, computer agent is blank, and remote tools is still disabled. So very, very easily for you to tell who's going to get what policies and what the end result's going to be. It's very easy when you only have default and one custom. But a lot of times you'll have different admins creating different settings for their collection of clients. And your clients are in different collections, so you might get multiple different policies or sets of settings targeted to them. So what's going to be that final end result? And this ability here in the console does show you what that end result is going to be because it is showing you the final listings of those. So very cool and very easy to implement. Now, I've not implemented those on my clients yet because I want to show you the next feature. The next feature is called client notification. So client notification is a great way for you to kick in your clients to do some specific actions. Primarily, it's retrieving computer policies. But you can also retrieve user policies. You can do some endpoint protection stuff, like initiating downloads of definitions or initiating scans of your clients. You can also do software update deployment evaluation. It's kind of like configuration managers or Microsoft's initial delving into those right-click tools that you guys all use in your console. Just that you don't have to implement those things for this type of activity now. Now, they're obviously not all the way there, so in the meantime, you guys still are using those right-click tools for initiating DDR cycles, heartbeat discovery, or hardware inventory type stuff, or maybe using the Cyrosyn Remote Manage app that we released a number of months ago that can help you out in this as well. So those capabilities are still there if you need to. But the cool thing with this feature is that you can now leave your client policy polling interval down to the default of hourly. You don't really want to shorten that interval, because a lot of times you guys will shorten those. I've seen people set them down to 2 minutes, 5 minutes, and you don't really want to do that in a production environment. It floods your management point with a lot of requests to see what policy assignments are available, if there's been any updates, and then downloading those policies. So you really do want to leave that at a 60-minute cycle. So I know some people even change it to higher values than that. And then they use this feature. So when they really have to get something done right away, they go in there and they kick it in with this feature or those right-click tools, just that now it's there in the console. It has been tested and supported on a full hierarchy of clients, so going from a CAS all the way down to all your primary sites, down to your hundreds of thousands of clients that you might have in that single that hierarchy. So it has been tested that to scale in that type of an environment. Okay, so now if I want to get those policies I just created for the System Center Universe 2015 tag or organization name for Software Center and Remote Control, easily I can just go to my device collections. I target at the workstation, so I just go workstations, client notification, download computer policy, kicks in, it says, hey, it's going to do its job. Let's go over to my Windows 8.1 client, sitting right here, go to full screen mode. And if the policy's been implemented already, then we can go to Start. We can go to Software Center. And there you can see the policy's been implemented because it does say SCU 2015 up here in Software Center. And if we just go, let's go run services.msc. Because we also enabled the remote tools or remote control service, which is not enabled by default. And configuration manager remote control service. It's there, you can see it's running, and it's set to automatically start now. So we have gone ahead and done that. So very, very easy. Leave your policy polling at the default 60 or whatever you deem is necessary for you. Then use this feature or something else in the console to go ahead and kick off these clients so that you can not overburden your management point and just utilize this when you really need to do that. Okay, application model. The application model is a great way of you guys managing your software deployments. Packages and programs I have listed here because you guys all know them. You guys all know them, you love them, you're used to them, you know how to make them work. So they're familiar, so a lot of people have stuck with the packages and programs model because of that familiarity. You already know how to make packages and programs do what you want them to do. The downside to continuing to use packages and programs instead of the application model is that packages and programs are more of a burden on your site server infrastructure. Because in order to really control who's getting the software, as far as computers, you're probably having very complex collection queries. Your computers in this collection, if it has this much memory, this much disk space, this type of a processor, you're a member of this Active Directory group, you don't already have the software installed. All that stuff relies on hardware inventory or discovery data. And you already know that your hardware inventory or discovery data can be out of date for a period of time. Computers are offline, hardware inventory got too big so the site server couldn't process it, had mismatches in there so you're out of date by weeks. So you may be in a collection that you shouldn't be in, or you may not be in a collection that you should be in to get software. So that's a downside to packages and programs. Well, the application model was developed in ConfigMan 2012 to help overcome some of these limitations in the packages and programs model. Now, it's still there. It has not gone away. Brad didn't state in his keynote whether it was going away in the future. Maybe some point in the future it will go away. I highly doubt it because there's just too many things that aren't really good for applications, like scripts, like your command line utilities, kicking off a utility that's already installed in your client, like a virus scanner, disk defragmenter. Those things aren't really that great for application model. The application model is great for software that you can identify and you can really tell whether it's on a client or not. The cool thing with the application model, I'll get to some of the benefits on the next slide, is that when you're deploying to software, when you deploy packages and programs, you have to determine which program from which package you're targeting to which collection. And so you may have a package with multiple programs, but you have each of those individual programs with different advertisements or deployments out to different collections. So it's the burden's on you guys to do that. With the application model, you have one app with multiple deployment types, i.e. programs, and you just say, take this app, deploy it to this collection. The client figures out which deployment type really means to your program, to install or run locally on that computer, based on some of these things we'll talk about on the next slide. So it makes your deployment process a whole lot easier to take care of, because it's all kind of built into the application model itself. So it uses requirements and requirement rules, global conditions, to do that collection stuff. Memory, disk space, processor type. It uses detection methods to see whether the software is already installed or not. So it's got a lot of those things built into the application model into the deployment type so that you can really tell whether or not to do something. You don't have to have those wrappers anymore to identify your software, or you don't have to rely on your hardware inventory anymore. So applications are state-based. What that means is you're going to do what the admin intends you to do. So if I, as the admin, say that this software is to be installed in your computer and it meets the requirements, it's going to install on that computer. If your end user then uninstalls that software, the application model is going to reinstall it again automatically. If I tell you that software can't be installed in your computer and I deploy an uninstall action to remove that software and it gets removed from your computer, and then you as the end user decide to reinstall that software, guess what? Config Manager is going to uninstall it again. So with the state-based nature of the application model, the admin intent is always going to win, and eventually, hopefully, your end user is going to give up and not fighting with you on that. You have alerts. So if you want to see what your deployment status is, management says this is a really high priority deployment, and I want to know on a daily basis what my status is. Alert me if we haven't reached our SLA after X number of days. You can do that with the application model. You can't do that with packages and programs, at least not built in. You have to do some status filter rules and things like that. Here you can do that built in with the application model. You can automatically supersede with newer versions. So you're going from Adobe Reader 10 to Adobe Reader 11. You have it automatically removed 10 and upgraded to 11. We already talked about the uninstall, and it supports AppV or virtual applications. So a very, very common scenario is that you'll have an application that has an MSI installer, and you've also sequenced as an AppV piece of software. You'll deploy that application to a collection of clients, and you'll say only install the MSI if the logged on user, when this runs, is the primary owner of that computer. In other words, they should always have that software. But if Travis is logged on to my computer, he's not the primary owner of my computer, don't let him install the MSI. But he still needs the app to do his work, so give him the AppV version of that application so he can do his work on my laptop, but he's not installing his junk on my laptop. So very, very cool. So let's take a couple moments to look at a couple of things in the app model. Oops, we don't want the Windows 8.1 client anymore. We want our site server again. So if we go back to software library, go to applications, and I've got a few applications in here. And you can see they tell you in column here how many deployment types you have. Deployment types, again, basically mean programs. So here's one program, here's two programs. Let's go ahead and look at the one that has two deployment types on it, which is the ConfigMan 2012 R2 toolkit. We'll go to its properties. We'll go to the deployment types. And you'll see that there are two different deployment types, one for an attended install and one for an unattended install. So let's go look to see. And when the client evaluates, it evaluates these based on priority order. So it's always going to check for the attended install first and see if it matches that installation requirements. So let's go look at him real quick, and we'll go to an edit. And here's the content where we get my source files from. Here's the programs. Here's how we install the software. Here's how we uninstall the software. Here's how we detect to see whether it's already there. You don't have to have that wrapper anymore to check to see whether the software is there, because ConfigMan can tell that for you automatically. Nor do you have to rely on hardware inventory to build a collection if the software is not already there. Requirements. I'm saying you can only install if you have at least a gig of physical memory, have a gig of free disk space, and primary device equals true. All makes sense. Unintended install. If I go look at its requirements, it's gonna have the same content, same program except with the slash Q to install, same detection methods, because it's the same software. Now my requirements, I'm just gonna say that the difference is primary device equals false. So let's go test this. This is one of the other cool things with the app model. I can simulate this deployment. So I can just take that software, click simulate. I wanna go to I'll go to everybody. So I'll go to all desktop and server clients. Oops, can't do that. We tell you, can't do that. You've already targeted that software as a real install to that collection. So let's go pick a different collection. So I'll take all systems. And when I simulate install, you can also simulate it uninstall. Now, this becomes a policy that gets sent out to your clients, and your clients will go ahead and retrieve policies, and they'll go ahead and run that simulation. So let's go ahead and force them to retrieve policies right away. I went to all systems, so I'll just do a client notification. Download computer policy, tell me I'm hitting everybody. And then it basically becomes a ASAP assignment. So it's gonna go ahead and run that deployment testing immediately, and it's gonna report back. So it's gonna take it a moment to report back in, so we'll come back here in just a moment, and we'll go back over to the monitoring workspace, and we'll go to deployments, and we'll look to see what our status is of this top one up here, which right now says 0% compliance. So we'll come back to this guy in just a moment. Okay, automatic deployment rules. We're down to 15 minutes. We're down to our last couple of features we have. So automatic deployment rules. I really like these things, but a lot of people don't really utilize them. And one of the reasons is that they're afraid of them, because you're talking about patching. And patching is such a high priority, high visible activity in your environment. You need to make absolutely certain that you're doing the right things with the right updates to the right systems at the right time. Otherwise, heads can roll and resumes have to be generated or updated. So people don't necessarily always trust the automatic deployment rules, but these guys are fantastic. They can remove a lot of the burden that you go through on a monthly basis. So every patch Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever date it rolls around for you, you go through the list of updates, you pick and choose which of those updates you want to deploy, you then add them to a software update group, you go ahead and create a deployment, configure all those settings you want in your deployment, you're doing this in your test lab, you're testing it out, then you go to your production environment, you do a pilot in your production environment, you go to your workstations, then you phase out to your different sections of servers and so on. It takes you a long time to do all this stuff, and it's a manual, tedious process. The automatic deployment rule can remove all that burden from you. You tell it how you want it to operate, what type of updates you want to select, how you want to handle software big groups, your target collection, all those criteria, and bingo, it takes everything and does that for you. So it's very, very easy to go ahead and utilize. So it's basically analogous to the automatic deployment rule or automatic approval rules in WSUS, which people have used for a lot of years, and ConfigMan never had until the automatic deployment rules. In the R2 release, there's a couple of updates you can add in or things you can do now. You can actually change your deployment package settings. In the past, if you were creating packages, they got to be too big, they were unwieldy getting out to new distribution points and managing them and updating and so on. And you couldn't change that. You had to delete that ADR and create a brand new ADR. Now you can go in there and change that package setting on the fly. You can also do a preview option or action to verify which updates that ADR is gonna select for you. And that's what I wanna demonstrate for you here. So let's go back, and before we do that, let's go to our simulation here. We should have some results back. Let's do a run summarization on this deployment. Notice it says 0% compliant. And I'll go ahead and refresh after I count to 17. And now we're 100% compliant. Okay, now a simulation does not deploy any software to anybody. All it's testing is the software already installed? Do I meet the detection method? So software already installed. Do I meet any dependency requirements? So does this software require something else to be installed already? And do I pass the requirement rules? But it's not pushing any bits down to your client other than the policy. It's not downloading anything from the distribution point. It's not trying to see, can I run msiexec/i/q config man2012r2toolkit.msi. It's not trying to install anything or not simulating that, just checking to see whether or not you'd have a chance at starting that install program or uninstall program. So here it says we're 100% compliant. If we look down at the pie chart, it says we have one success and we have four requirements not met. Let's go ahead and view our status. So we click on view status. And it tells us for success, we have the computer is primary, that's my site server. And the status is already compliant. That's our success. This guy already has that toolkit installed. One computer already has the toolkit installed. The other four when requirements not met. So if I click on requirements not met, we see our requirements, primary device equals false, memory, disk space, and then what the deployment type was, and then our status is requirements not met. Here we say, for example, primary device equals false. And my other four clients, the answer is true. So the primary device owner is true, so that means we can't run that one. So attended install. We couldn't run that one because we didn't have enough memory. So here it says memory has to be 1,024 megabytes, and it shows you what your actual results are. Ooh, we were darn close. So a megabyte, 3 megabytes. So what this would tell me to do is go back now and change my requirement in my deployment type to say 1,000 megabytes instead of 1024. And then this would have passed. And all these guys would have been compliant, or they would have been successful because they would have been able to pass through. And the other one was also physical memory on the unattended install. Couldn't run that one because, again, they didn't have enough memory. So this allows you to test your requirement rules, your detection methods, and also your dependencies before you actually go out there and pushing stuff out across the wire and verifying through real deployments. Now, one more thing right there real quick that I'll show you is we also have this down at the very bottom, this deployment types tab, which is very cool. So if your deployment or application has multiple deployment types, you just click deployment types, and it will show you down here. Let me move this up a little bit. It'll show you in a chart which deployment types have been tried to be deployed, implemented, or evaluated. So maybe in your environment, where this comes really cool, is in your environment, you think that you should have a whole lot more MSI installs happening. But you look here and it shows a whole lot more AppV installations happening, or AppV deployment types being implemented. That would tell you that you probably have your primary device set incorrectly for those users, or some other requirement on your MSI install as opposed to the AppV virtual version. But this will give you a breakdown of what the actual implementations have been in your environment. So very cool. Okay, so we were talking about ADRs. Let's go back to software library, software updates. Let's get rid of these guys, get us more real estate. And here I have a bunch of updates in my environment. And I have no automatic deployment rules. Let's create one real quick. I know I'm almost out of time. I got 8 minutes. I'll just say Windows 8.1 updates is what I'm going to deploy here. This is Travis. Travis manages software updates for the desktops. And we're going to go ahead and pull in the Patch Tuesday template, so it fills in a lot of answers for us. We want to go to the All Workstations collection. Now, for those of you that were afraid of what the software or automatic deployment rule would do for you, here's your safety net. If you still are afraid of the automatic deployment rule and you don't want to bite the bullet and have it really do everything for you, go ahead and run the ADR, but remove this checkbox. When the checkbox is cleared, it does not enable the deployment. It'll select the updates. It'll create the software update group. It'll create the deployment. It'll put the updates in the appropriate package for you. Everything's done, except the deployment is not active. You can then go back and do your quality assurance to verify the correct updates are there, the collection settings are correct, the deployment settings are correct, the targets there set correctly. Then you just right-click that deployment and say enable. So that's your kind of your safety net. Now, I trust this, so us being Microsoft, I still have a habit of saying we and us, referring to Microsoft and Configuration Manager, which I'm not anymore. We're going to go ahead and take the defaults here. we want to go ahead and say date released or revised. I've got an old environment, so I'm going to say in the last, I'll say 4 months. And I want security updates. For the product, I want just Windows 8.1. So we'll cruise on down here to Windows 8.1. Select that. And now I hit preview. So here's that little magic button down at the bottom. Hit preview. That was added in the R2 release. And it shows me I got 56 updates. So 56 updates meet my criteria. So this allows you to verify, here's exactly what this ADR is going to do when it runs. Here's the type of updates it's going to select. Now, certainly, when it does run, you may have had another synchronization event for Microsoft Update, so you may have new updates in there. So it may not be the same 56 updates. It may be 65 updates, depending upon what's been synced. But you're verifying the type of updates here. I don't have any Itanium updates in here. These are only 64-bit updates. These are only for SQL 2012. Whatever your criteria is, you're validating that with this preview button. Now, you can even get even more complex in here if you want to. If I go ahead and add in custom severity, and I want to say I only want to go to updates we say are important. So we're going to add a custom severity of important in my environment. So now I hit preview, and obviously I've got nothing, because by default, no updates have a custom severity designated on them. So if I want to go ahead and set that real quickly, I just go back to software library, go to my software updates. Let's just add a couple criteria here real quick. We'll say date released or revised. And we'll do product. Add those. Date released or revised, last 3 months. And our product, Windows 8.1. OK, 132 updates I have in there. So let's just go ahead and multi-select a whole bunch of these. And let's go ahead and do properties. Those multi-selected updates. And let's do a custom severity. What I said important, I think. And we'll let it process that. And if I did my criteria correctly, then I should be able to, when this finishes, go back to my ADR, hit preview again, and now it should show some updates that are, if I just go back to the window. And now it's down to 14 updates. So now I have 14 updates that meet my criteria. So now I've been able to really validate these are the updates I really do want to deploy on my monthly basis or for this one coming up. And so I would go and say, yes, I do trust this. I would go ahead and finish off my ADR, which is to go ahead and configure my when I want it to run, when I want my patches to be deployed. And by default, we're saying give the DP 4 hours to get the patches downloaded and distributed to it. And then in 7 days, these patches become mandatory. So you configure these values the way you want to. You go ahead and designate whether you want to ignore maintenance windows for reboots or for installations. Do you want to suppress restarts? Do you want to commit to Windows Embedded? Do you want to have alerting turned on if you're not meeting your SLA? What do you want to do if you can't find them on your preferred DP? Do you want to fall back to Microsoft updates and so on? All these different options. And then your package. So I'll just go ahead and click cancel there. I got one more thing to show you. So, but that thing gives you that ability. So what that would do is that would go ahead and create a new software update group here. And that software update group would have a deployment on it. We'd have a deployment, which, again, I did not complete the ADR. And you would just right-click and say enable if it was a disabled deployment. And then it would be an active deployment. So that can help save you a lot of that time and burden on a monthly basis of manually picking and choosing those updates, running through the DSUW, answering all those questions. Let the ADR do it for you. And again, if you still don't trust us, just clear that checkbox to enable it so it creates disabled ones. Okay, I think this is the last thing I have in here, which hopefully is correct because I got less than 3 minutes. And that is software update maintenance windows. This is new as of ConfigMan 2012 R2. And as you guys know, the Microsoft Configuration Manager team is client-focused. They don't delve into the server realm very often. They don't get into the data center. Now, absolutely, they support Configuration Manager as a client or as a server platform on top of servers sitting in your data center. They just don't architect solutions around the data center environment. This is one of those deviations, however. very, very strong feedback from our customers was, we need to have better control over when our patches get deployed to our servers. So what the product group did for the R2 release is they added a new type of maintenance window called the software update maintenance window. Prior to this, what would happen is, let's say Travis was doing software distribution and I was doing software updates. And Travis would create a maintenance window for his software distribution that was gonna be on Saturday morning. I wanted patches to be deployed Sunday morning. Well, prior to R2, there was no differentiation there. So because we both created maintenance windows on our same collection, my patches would deploy during his maintenance window on Saturday. So I wasn't really having that granular control of when my patches are being deployed. Now with the software update maintenance window, I can control that. So let me go to my collection. We want all servers, properties, maintenance windows. I'm going to add, we'll call this software. So this is the Travis window. It's going to be Saturdays, 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. Great. And now I'm going to add one for my updates. I know I misspelled updates, but I don't care. Don't have time to fix it. And I want it to be Sundays, 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. But I'm going to go ahead and drop down here to this new little option in R2. I'm going to pick the software updates type. So now I've got two maintenance windows available. With the maintenance window created that is specific to software updates, my clients will never deploy software during Travis's window, software updates. So if I go to monitoring, go to reporting, go to reports, and I run maintenance. Maintenance window is available to pick specified client, run that. And I want to look at my domain controller. So when's my domain controller going to get its patches? And hopefully it finishes off in the next 10 seconds. That's how much time I have. It's supposed to be prompting me for my computer right now. And any second now, here's where we dance. And I don't dance very well at all, nor do I watch the Godfather movies, obviously. There we go, finally. DC. And now you can see that my computer has available to it two different maintenance windows. It has Travis's window, which occurs, this is my window, on Sundays, and then it has Travis's window that occurs on Saturday. Prior to R2, my patches would get deployed on the Saturday window because that was the next available window. With R2, because I do have that first window designated as a software update only window, that's the only time my patches will deploy. So now I have that really specified and designated control over when my patches are going to be deployed to my environment. So that's great. So there you have it. I'm a few seconds over. Hopefully you saw a couple of things in here that might incent you or excite you about the product to do a little more investigation in or a little more playing around in your lab environments first and then move over to production. But hopefully there's some things that you said, hey, I do that, or no, Wally's stupid, we shouldn't do that type stuff, but you can holler at me later on today if you want to about those things. With that, thanks. You all have a great rest of your day and appreciate it.